A reading from the Gospel according to John. As John stood with two of his disciples, Jesus passed, and John stared hard at him and said, "Look, there is the Lamb of God." Hearing this, the two disciples followed Jesus. Jesus turned round, saw them following, and said, "What do you want?" He answered, "Rabbi," which means teacher, "where do you live?" "Come and see," he replied. So they went and saw where he lived and stayed with him the rest of that day. It was about the 10th hour. One of these two who became followers of Jesus after hearing what John had said was Andrew, the brother of Simon Peter. Early next morning, Andrew met his brother and said to him, "We have found the Messiah," which means the Christ. And he took Simon to Jesus. Jesus looked hard at him and said, "You are Simon, son of John. You are to be called Cephas," which means rock. This is the Gospel of the Lord. Thomas Aquinas asks at the beginning of his Summa, question 2, whether God exists. As he puts it, he tends to give the argument against what he thinks first. It seems that God does not exist. Gives arguments, then refutes the arguments. He never asks whether Jesus exists. He never says it seems that Jesus did not exist. You have to be quite modern to start doubting the existence of historical characters. There are people who might well not have existed, Robin Hood, for instance, and these people were probably not meant to exist in the original texts, and there's no trace of their impact in history on life. But two people do say Jesus did not exist. Gerald Collins, in his book Much Recommended, Rethinking Fundamental Theology, simply describes that as madness. Still, sometimes it's good to ask crazy questions. Why would we think Jesus did not exist? I think to those who do say that, the answer is to ask another question. Who else didn't exist? Paul? Simon? James? John? The earlier Christians? Jude? The people who were mentioned in Paul's letters? People in the Gospel. Some of them exist, obviously. Pontius Pilate, his name is set in stone. Herod Antipas, plenty of references to them. But also, it's not just that these other people existed. It's also a question of, if Jesus did not exist, who invented him? Of course, a lot of people would then say Paul, which is usually a good sign that they haven't read the letters of St. Paul. They say, Paul invented Christianity. You say, strange way to do it, really, writing a few letters which have survived more or less by accident. Letters sent to big towns, but also small places, like Galatia. It's like somebody who sends a letter to New York and then sends one to some small place in Montana. Certainly doesn't seem like it a very systematic way of doing it. But also he mentions people. If he invents Jesus, did he have to invent Peter, James and John as well, since he mentions them? And he's writing to people who apparently know them. He calls them the apparent or the seeming pillars of the church. Did he invent the people he wrote the letters to? How much could be imaginary? Now Jesus exists because he has friends and people who know him. It's interesting that Paul in fact never calls Peter Simon. We discover that his name is Simon in the Gospels. It's also a fact that Paul learns about Jesus not just from his vision of Christ, but from the many people he'd met, and of course the many people he persecuted. Now, Jesus is part of a web of people, and webs are very strong things. The web of people is such that when you try to cut one or two strands, it still stays fairly stable, solid. In fact, you have to cut many strands to make it collapse. The same way to deny that Jesus existed would be to deny that Simon, Peter, James, John existed, perhaps even Paul, say that his letters were fake. And of course, even quite conservative scholars speculate that some of his letters were written by Paul's friends and disciples. But in fact, that's more evidence of Paul's existence. No, a single Jesus is no Jesus. A single person is no person. We all live in a web of people. And the web is 2,000 years old, but there's not that many links in that web, not that many strands connecting with other strands. I was working out when I was ordained by Archbishop Winning in Glasgow, became Cardinal Winning afterwards, how far back I'd have to go to reach Christ. Couldn't say there's a continual chain written down, but in fact, three consecrations, three ordinations, the man that ordained Cardinal Winning as a priest, the man that ordained him, the man after that, brought me back to the middle of the 19th century. At that rate, it would only take about 60 ordinations to get back to Christ, to Simon Peter. That's why this gospel that seems rather matter-of-fact, rather day-to-day, where Andrew goes to Simon, Simon brings him, and it's people talking to people, is actually crucial to the evidence for Christ's existence, for Jesus' existence, and also his impact. John the Baptist saw him. Andrew was a disciple of John the Baptist. Simon was the brother of Andrew. That's the web. That's the connections. It's worth thinking about those connections. But also we have to go beyond that and say, the Christ who's part of this web of human beings of who knew each other, it's also the one that transcends the web, or perhaps better say, makes the web resonate with contact and love, because the Christ who walks past Andrew and Simon as if he doesn't know them is in fact the Christ through whom they were made, and the Christ who was born for their redemption and their greatness and their happiness and for all people. Jesus is one with all humanity. But it begins by knowing a few people, by having friends, by belonging, as we all do and all must, to find Christ and to find each other.